We're going to talk about a very touchy subject in this episode. But first of all, I want to say kudos to you for being vulnerable and open enough to acknowledge that you have a concern around controlling habits, clicking on this episode to listen in, because it takes courage to see ourselves as we really are and then make a decision to do something about it. So well done you. Today, we'll explore more about why trauma survivors tend to be controlling, what it costs us, and how to learn a healthier and happier way to be with yourselves and in relationships with others. Hey, sister friend, welcome to the Shades of Trauma Healing podcast. Do you want to overcome the wounds and impacts of childhood trauma that are holding you back in life? Do you want to get unstuck, begin thriving, and confidently living God's best in all areas? I'm Jenny L., a certified clinical trauma specialist, life coach, trauma thriver, and most of all, a daughter of God living loved and on purpose. In this podcast, I'll share trauma education, healing strategies, along with biblical applications and motivational stories to support you in your journey toward trauma healing and thriving. So grab your journal, settle into your favorite spot, and let's begin. Trauma survivors develop controlling behaviors as coping mechanisms to regain a sense of safety, security, and control over their environment following an experience of trauma. If you find that you can't help yourself and you just always need to control other people or other things, or maybe people have told you are so controlling. I know that on one level, it hurts to hear that and to realize that about yourself. But on the other hand, you just don't know how else to survive. And that's the thing. Traumatized people see controlling as a survival mechanism. But let's look at how this could develop. At the time of the trauma, a survivor will often experience a profound sense of loss of control, either over their circumstances, their body, or their sense of safety. Because they feel so powerless and vulnerable during the traumatic time, it leads them to this heightened need to regain control in order to have some sort of normalcy in their lives. As they grow older, they realize that controlling helps them to cope with feelings of helplessness, and that is a way that they can begin to feel safe. Talking about safety, this is usually the number one priority of trauma survivors, especially when they are younger. When they experience a trauma, the survivor interprets the world as unpredictable, as dangerous. So, understandably, prioritizing safety and security will be on the agenda. So controlling behaviors is one way that the survivor could try to get that sense of predictability and stability in their environment as a means of self-protection. And once this works and you learn it in childhood and it meets the need at a young age, it tends to stay with the person for life or until controlling becomes a hindrance to their well-being or starts affecting the relationship with their loved ones. Hypervigilance is also another effect of the trauma, and this happens on a biological level. So the body is naturally going into that fight or freeze response when it is heightened. So the survivor then relies on controlling behaviors as a way to anticipate or to prevent when these perceived risks or harms may be happening so that they don't get triggered and that they remain as safe as possible. They don't ever usually feel safe, but at least they're not triggered or acting out of a sense of release of negative emotions. So it is another way to keep themselves safe. And this brings me to the avoidance of triggers, as I touched on just a little bit ago. When trauma survivors face a lot of triggers, it can be so overwhelming that they don't ever want to go through that. Nobody wants to face a panic attack or feel anxiety shooting through their body. And as a result, if trauma survivors know there are any things that they can control in their environment as much as possible to minimize or to avoid those triggers or any reminders or flashbacks of the trauma, they are going to go on high alert, when they exert that type of control, they are attempting to minimize exposure to situations or to stimuli that would bring back those distressing memories or emotions associated with the trauma. All of these actions, whatever form they come in, is an attempt to regain empowerment, which is one of the most common reasons I see for controlling behaviors. And I know it's certainly one of the driving factors that used to play a part in my controlling behavior. By exerting control over themselves or others or their surroundings, it counteracts that feeling of powerlessness, and it gives the trauma survivor a sense of autonomy and self-determination that they lost at the time of the trauma. Unfortunately, for anyone on the receiving end of that type of control, it does not feel like they have any breathing space, and they can begin developing resentment towards the survivor, who is still continuing to act from a space of just wanting to feel safe. Controlling behavior is just one of the impacts of developmental trauma, because trauma experienced during critical periods of development, such as childhood, actually disrupts your ability to form secure attachments and healthy coping mechanisms. And I'm sharing all of this with you because I want you, or maybe anyone who you love who is listening in, to understand that there is a reason for your controlling behaviors. It is how you learn to survive what happened to you. With that understanding, I hope you can let go of any shame or guilt. You can maybe stop being hard on yourself and exercise a bit more self-compassion. I would even go as far as to say, acknowledge that your controlling ways helped you survive thus far. And that is what it was meant to do. That is what is the definition of a coping mechanism. It helps you to cope and to survive. Now that you've gotten to this point in your life as an adult, you can now begin to look at different ways to feel safe so you can let go of the controlling behaviors as you learn to heal and trust other people. It is important to note also that while controlling behaviors may provide a temporary sense of relief or security, this behavior can strain or even destroy your relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship, friendship, or professional partnership. Controlling actions can erode trust and lead to resentment and conflict between you and other people. And if you think about it, individuals who are subject to your controlling behaviors often feel as though they are losing their autonomy. This can lead to them feeling helpless, having low self-esteem, or a diminished sense of self-worth. An example of this could be if you are a controlling parent over your children. This is what the trauma survivor experienced when they were going through their trauma and had their choice taken away from them. And as we know, hurt people hurt people. These survivors grow up to have controlling behaviors, repeating the pattern of what happened to them onto someone else. Controlling behavior also hinders your personal and professional growth. When you are constantly trying to stay in control, you may be reluctant to pursue other interests, to take measured risks, which are essential for growth and development. The hypervigilance just keeps you in safety mode. You're not free to be curious, to explore, to go learn more about yourself. So these are ways, or this is another reason for you to look at the controlling behavior, see how it's hampering you, and how you can learn to be different so you can be different. So how do you begin letting go of this coping mechanism that you have turned to for so long, for so many years? How do you let go of control? Now, the first thing I would suggest is to find healthy ways to feel safe in your body and in your environment. Because remember, the main reason why people exert controlling behaviors, especially trauma survivors, is so that they can create this sense of safety. It's not wise for you to just say, in fact, it's kind of going to be really hard to just give up control without feeling safe. You need to feel safe and recognize that sense of safety on a biological level, in order to say, okay, I can let go of this coping mechanism because I don't need it anymore. So the first thing would be to address the hypervigilance that creates or constantly brings up the past threats and triggers, which contributes to the feelings of feeling unsafe. This can be done through somatic or body exercises and interventions by a trained professional to help you release that stored trauma in your body and learn to have a settled and regulated nervous system. So then this is where trauma-informed therapy comes in. This can help you address unresolved trauma and its impact on your behavior as well as the coping mechanisms. There are therapeutic approaches such as brain spotting or EMDR. There is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy or somatic experiences. All of these can help you process traumatic memories, regulate your emotions, cultivate a greater sense of safety and security, and help you develop healthier coping strategies moving forward. Once you feel safe in your body and your nervous system learns to feel safe and regulated on a daily basis, you can then safely look at more cognitive exercises because your brain would be able to stay engaged longer because your body is not taking over with chemicals and hormones that sends you into a trauma response. And as you begin to look at cognitive exercises, I always start with the acknowledgement. Because if we are not honest with ourselves, it's going to be hard to make any change. So recognize and acknowledge that you have controlling habits, that they are causing you distress, they are hindering relationship with God and with other people. Then acknowledge the need to change, and if it's really difficult for you to change, even if you don't want to change, acknowledge that and take that to God in prayer. Surrender your desire and your will to want to change and ask Him to make you ready or willing to follow through on the process. Turning to God and relinquishing controlling habits involves a process of surrender. It involves a process of learning to trust God, and it needs you to be more reliant on His guidance and His strength. So here are some steps you can take to turn to God to let go of the controlling behavior. I mentioned already prayer. Pray for guidance and pray to surrender. Ask God to give you the wisdom, to give you the strength to overcome the habits after you've done the physical work and you continue to do this alongside your trauma therapy. Surrender your desires for control and ask God to help you release the grip on situations and outcomes, trusting that He has a divine plan, He has a divine time for your life, and everything that He allows is for a purpose in your life, and He can redeem you out of any situation. You can even go as far as to ask God who you can trust to help you in this journey. Then find a supportive community who can pray with you, who can encourage you, and who can hold you accountable as you seek to let go of these behaviors. The next one is a tough one. Release perfectionism. No matter how you try, my friend, your world would not be perfect, and this is part of life. And it's okay to let go of the need of perfection and embrace the reality of human imperfection. But I know full well that perfection is also a coping mechanism to feel safe. So once again, work on feeling safe in your body and in your environment, then little by little, learn to let go of the perfectionism, learn to understand how much God loves you as you are, until you find it easier to do this in the power of His might. The more you begin to relax in your body and have safe experiences, the less you will need to rely on external factors to feel safe. As a Christian woman, trauma survivor, a big part of the healing process is learning to trust God, because we never really learn to trust other people. And then if we had our first encounter of Christ through how other people treated us, then we begin to question and mistrust God. But developing trust in God is also important in the healing journey. Start small, one area at a time. And surrender that little area to God and say, God, I trust you with X. I trust you with Y. And watch how God shows up for you. in my process of learning to trust God, I did this very slowly as well. I would surrender area by area. The more God showed up consistently in one area, the more my faith grew in Him, and I would decide to open up another area to Him. And I continued to do this, and my faith continued to grow. And please, my sister friend, know that God understands your humanity. He doesn't expect from you what you are not willing to give Him in that moment. It doesn't mean to say He does not expect things of you, but He would help you and strengthen you to get there. And He understands the gentleness that you need, the pacing that you need, and He is so patient with you. So take your time with this. Allow God to fill you and strengthen you and encourage you, and bit by bit, take steps to move closer and closer to Him, releasing more and more areas of your life to Him. Gradually entrust more aspects to His care, and as you experience His faithfulness and provision, you will see that your trust in Him will continue to grow. While you're having all of these wonderful experiences, take notes and journal about it and practice gratitude. When the children of Israel were moving through to the promised land, they would stop and create altars every now and again to mark the miraculous works of God. And they said, when our children and our grandchildren ask us, what do these stones mean? The adults would recount how God provided and how He took care of them. And the purpose of this was twofold, because on one hand, it allowed the older ones who experienced God to relive His goodness. And then it allowed the ones who were hearing it to learn how God was able to provide for their forefathers, their parents, their grandparents. So therefore, this God would be able to provide for me. Now, in your case, as you make note of your experiences, also incorporate this attitude of gratitude, focusing on God's blessings and His faithfulness in your life. And once you have a written record, you can use those as a reminder of God's provision and guidance and grace, especially when things get hard, because there are going to be times when things are so hard. You're questioning, is God really in this? Is He with me? Because you just can't get a sense of where He is when circumstances are so difficult. These are the times you go back to your quote-unquote altar, your written record of what God has done for you. Reread it, recall, notice how you felt, what words you wrote down. Give God the praise for showing up for you like that, and then ask Him to reignite your faith in Him to continue on in the journey. So does the idea of letting go of control scare you? Do you think if you let go, things will become unmanageable? Can you feel the resistance in your body even as you think about letting go? It's all right, my sister friend. That is all part of the process, and you do not have to attack or try to do everything all at once. Take baby steps, knowing that controlling is a coping mechanism which did not form overnight. So it will take time to learn and relearn new ways of being. Start by acknowledging that you need to change how you behave. And you already listened to this episode, so something inside of you is already leaning towards that. Now get curious about healthy ways to be safe, whether you pursue it somatically, emotionally, spiritually, or all of the above, because we are holistic creatures, so we might as well approach it from every domain. Then get support, because you don't want to be doing this alone. It's going to be really tough. The isolation will drive you back to your familiar ways. So share your journey with your closest people. Let them know what you will be doing and ask them to be patient with you as you seek to change the way you relate with them and with other people. For additional support, you can join me over in the Facebook community, Heal Childhood Trauma as Christian Women of Color. This is a safe space for like-minded women to get support and sisterhood as they heal. If you want to continue supporting the podcast, sign up to become a Shades of Trauma Healing Podcast Insider at subscribepage.io/STH podcast. And you will receive weekly inspirational emails. You will get first access to any developments that are released related to the podcast. And once again, that link is subscribepage.io/SDH podcast. Continue to send me your emails as well. If you have any questions or thoughts, encouragement, testimonies, let me know. I would be happy to read them and even share some of them on the platform so it can be an encouragement for other women. And as we wrap up for today, I leave you with prayers of hope and healing that God will continue to walk alongside you in your healing journey, leading you to exactly the right resources, ideas, and thoughts to help you as you seek to let go of control. I pray that His Holy Spirit will just fill you anew today and give you that Holy Spirit boldness to take the step towards trusting God, letting go of old coping mechanisms that no longer serve you, and holding on to Him, the one who is your strength and your guide in this crazy topsy-turvy world. We know that we have a solid rock, a refuge, and a strength who longs to heal, redeem, and restore us. Before you go, sister friend, did this podcast episode encourage, inspire, or teach you something new? If so, would you be so kind as to share it with another friend who needs help to overcome her childhood trauma? And don't forget to hop over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and a written review for the show. This way, the show can reach more sisters who need to hear it. Thank you for listening, and know that I am cheering for your healing. I'll be back next week, so until then, take time to breathe and be blessed.